Hey guys, Warren Williams here. Welcome back to the Whole Bean series. So it's been a while, been quite a while. Didn't want to be away so long, but life gets in the way and have had lots of interesting projects. I'll share those on another podcast. But today we're back and I'm really now focusing on doing some podcasts with guests, whereas what I've done normally in recent times is just done solo podcasts, just talking and breaking down information. And I know some of the feedback I've gotten is people love those anyway, but I want to start doing some more collaborations. So this is the first of quite a few collaborations I'm going to be doing with quite a few interesting people. So today's guest is Chantel Gary, and she's from America. I think she was raised in Georgia, but now kind of lives in Boston. So she's a Bostonian. And this is a great interview. Of course, I'm going to say that, but I'm sure you guys will agree. So this one, really focusing on Chantel, who's a herbalist, as well as a vegan chef. So I interviewed her last week, and it was great. I was quite surprised by some of the things that she came up with. We really touched the board on so many different subjects. I actually didn't even know she was a herbalist. And I like sometimes to do podcasts with people and not know too much about them, so it's more authentic, that the questions are inspiring and kind of motivating and stimulating me. I get the same level of surprise that the listener gets, so it's quite authentic, so sometimes I like doing that. So yeah, I didn't know she was a herbalist, but yep, she's a herbalist, as well as a chef, as well as a photographer. She has a son. And yeah, it's a really good podcast. We talk a lot about food, her views on plant-based eating, and the differences between plant-based as opposed to being vegan. Yep, there is a difference. And she starts to talk about detoxification. We talk about that quite a bit. We talk about sustainability, the ecology of the planet, when it comes to farming, the global crisis on the planet. She talks about really good, easy foods that you can prepare, which is very helpful for people, foods that you can eat on the go, like quick foods, some of the best sort of ingredients to use when it comes to food preparation, because she's mainly a chef, as well as doing a lot of herbalism. So she basically posts a lot of stuff on her Instagram page, which is Be Vegan Instagram. Just search on Instagram, Be Vegan, and she posts so many beautiful recipes. So because she knows a lot of people are really into the taste as opposed to just the nutritional benefits, she really focuses a lot on making the food healthy but also delicious. So we get into some of the really good ways you can prepare food and the quickest, easiest kind of tools or ingredients to use to actually create quick meals. So we cover quite a lot. So we talk about nutrition, we talk about the climate of the planet, we talk about the vegan movement, we talk about what plant-based is, we talk about herbalism, we talk about parasites, cleanses, we talk about skincare. So many different things relating to the human body with regards to health. So I really hope you guys enjoy this, and yeah, I'll speak to you again at the end. Peace and love, guys. Okay, everybody, welcome once again to the Whole Bean series. So today I'm going to be talking to someone that I've watched on social media performing some great cooking, delivering some great cooking and a beautiful channel. So we kind of spoke just off recording, but I actually realized I don't know your surname yet. So Chantel, what's your surname?
Chantel Gary.
Okay, it's Chantel Gary. And where are you calling from today? What area do you live in?
I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts right now.
Right. So I saw on your Instagram channel that I think did you have Atlanta as well as
Yes, so I was born and raised in Atlanta, but right now I reside in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Right,
so much colder.
Okay, cool. And what's the weather like?
It's cold. Okay. It's not as sunny and pretty, but I manage.
Okay. And how long have you been living there?
So I've been in Cambridge for about 4 years now, 3 or 4 years now.
Right. Okay. And what made you move there? Was it business opportunities?
You know, all of my family kind of migrated here and I missed them terribly. So I just kind of followed everyone else in my family. So my mom, my sisters are here, my nephew's here. Okay. Schools are better here, just better resources here. Right, and right, right. I came up here and now I'm stuck.
Okay. So before we kind of get into it, if just for the listeners, just tell us kind of how would you describe your, before we get into your background, how would you mm-hmm. describe what you do? Like, are you a chef, or how would you describe what your title is?
So that might take up the entire 45 minutes.
Okay.
So I'll try to just kind of make everything as compact as possible. So I do a lot of different things under my business, which is Let's Be Vegan. So I do cooking instruction. So I do teach people how to cook a plant-based diet. I also do a food blog, which takes up a lot of my time. I do lots of food photography.
Wow.
I'm also an herbalist,
make
herbal medicine.
Wow.
Yeah, I have an online herb shop. So I do a lot of different things under the umbrella of Let's Be Vegan. And, you know, my cookbooks and things like that. So it keeps me pretty busy. And I do do a lot under the umbrella of Let's Be Vegan. So it really is my life.
Wow.
At this point.
Right. Mm-hmm. So now that you've told me that, and, you know, sometimes when people do podcasts, they tend to, which is great, they tend to research the person and mm-hmm. know exactly, you know, everything they need to when they're prefacing their questions. But I don't know, I think it's kind of good. I like to kind of have this authentic kind of conversation, like I'm actually learning for the first time with the person as well. So the,
right.
you know, the followers can like, oh, wow, this is a real authentic mm-hmm. first connection. So
yeah.
I mean, the herbalist stuff and just some of the things you mentioned, I'm like, okay, this is probably not going to be a 45-minute interview. So it might be probably like an hour now, because I've got some really interesting questions now with regards
awesome.
To that. So because we're on it, let's get on to your background. So if you just kind of mm-hmm. summarize what kind of led you to the path of having this umbrella of these multiple kind of avenues under this company you have, how do you kind of get into that?
Wow. So there are quite a few catalysts, I would say, or paradigms that happened in my life that kind of led me to where I am right now. On the food side, when I was about 24, 25 years old, I kind of accidentally became the owner and operator of a soul food restaurant in the deep south of Georgia. And I was vegetarian at the time. So I don't know how much you know about the deep south.
I've actually been to Georgia. I've been to Georgia.
Oh, so then you might understand.
I've been there 8 times. So.
So in the south, people really love their meat. They love they love that southern style of food. And at the time when I became the owner and operator of this restaurant, I was already vegetarian and I hadn't had meat in maybe like 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed the challenge of creating things that were vegetarian for people that had no interest in being vegetarian. So it was kind of a place where I was able to be really creative and create recipes and test them out and get immediate reactions for things. And that really kind of sparked my love and interest for just creating different recipes. So that's kind of where the things for, you know, Let's Be Vegan on the food side started. I didn't realize it was going to become what it is for me today. But at the time, well, in retrospect, looking back, I can totally identify that that was definitely a very significant point in my career for food.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then I'll jump into just a little bit of the herbal side, because these things kind of happened in conjunction with each other.
Yeah.
I had, like I said, I was already vegetarian, stopped eating meat, and I was really just enamored with plant life. You know, I just would, I'm a very nature oriented person. So I spent a lot of time like outside in nature, and I was just like, all of these plants are here for a reason. Everything does something. Mm-hmm. What does this one do? So I then started to teach myself how to forage for wild food and how to identify mm-hmm. plants out in the wild, and how did they, you know, how did they work for the human body? How do we use them? How do we harvest them? How do we process them for medicine? So those things kind of happened parallel to each other for me. And so that's kind of where, that's where the start of everything became. I had no idea it would take over my life the way that it has, but that's where it pretty much began.
Wow. I've got some questions to ask you about that. I'll get to those in a little bit. I don't want you to lose your train of thought. Right. So, how did you move into kind of, setting up your social media, and then also your teaching, you're talking about, being a cooking mm-hmm. teacher and the photography stuff.
Well, that's so interesting. The social media thing happened very organically for me, very, very organically. I was just kind of tired of people in my real life constantly asking me, well, you don't eat meat, so what do you eat? Do you just eat grass? And so I was like, you know what? Yeah. Let me just show you guys what I eat. Let me just share with you guys. And that is literally how my page started. Right. I would just, I mean, if you go back, don't do it because the pictures are horrible. If you were to go back to the beginning of like my Be Vegan social media page, you would see some pretty bad food photography and some, you know, pretty simple, you know, dishes, but that's really just kind of where it started. I was just like, you know what, let me just share with people how easy it is, and hopefully it will help them get to where they want to be a lot quicker if I can be a resource for people. And that's really just kind of where my community has come from with social media.
Okay.
Very organically.
Yeah, because I've shared your actually just talking about I was working with a professional tennis athlete this afternoon, and because she's actually just watched we can probably talk about this as part of our questions mm-hmm. the documentary Game Changers. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I haven't, but you're
aware of it.
I think someone mentioned this to me just last week about the athletes who are. They have like a vegan chef that is making them an exclusive vegan diet. Is that documentary?
Yeah, I think that was actually in Atlanta as well. There's a lot of basketball people. Yeah. So with that documentary, in hindsight now, a lot of athletes are looking at this avenue of possibly being a plant-based athlete. And that's kind of what that documentary kind of has set up in most people's minds. So that documentary came out in September. So it's quite a new thing, but mm-hmm. based on that, she was actually asking me today, inquiring about the plant-based stuff. So I was just talking to her about a few things today. So it's just really interesting about this drive where a lot of people are moving towards, or mm-hmm. You know, the possibility of actually being plant-based now. So just before we kind of get onto some of the other directions of some of the questioning, what, still kind of staying with your background for a minute so we don't lose the trail of thought here, what did you eat when you grew up? I know you said a lot of people in mm-hmm. where you were growing up would eat meat based, and you became kind of vegetarian, I'm assuming, when you were about 19 or something. What kind of foods were, what was your traditional sort of foods that you ate prior to moving into vegetarian and then veganism?
Well, that's so interesting because I have a very I will say like split background. So half of my family is Muslim and the other half of my family is from the South. So I kind of grew up with two different dynamics of food. So on one hand, being in the South, there was lots of, you know, rice and baked chicken and fried chicken and macaroni and cheese and collard greens, you know, the typical Southern foods. And then on the other side, you know, I've never had pork or anything like that. Right. But just like the traditional, you know, we call it sad American diet, I grew up with a single mother who didn't have a lot of money. So we ate a lot of foods out of convenience, nothing very health oriented. And not because she didn't want to do better, but just because she didn't know. Yeah, just out of circumstance. But, you know, just a very typical diet of just crappy food. You know, just crappy food, you know. So, you know, that's, I really didn't, when I made the transition, it was all new to me as well. It was new for me. It wasn't like something that I was like, okay, I know what to do. I know what to substitute for this. You know, when I initially made the transition into I was a vegetarian first. When I did that, I initially did it just blindly. I remember just standing in the grocery store like, okay, I can't eat this. I can't eat that. I can't get this. I can't get that. And walking out with a bag of like Cheez-Its and a can of Campbell's soup and potatoes. And that's like literally how I started. I just was like, I don't know what to do. I'm just, whatever's not meat, that's what I'll gravitate to. But it was definitely a journey. It's definitely been a journey.
And was there any one incident or person that inspired you to make this transition?
Oh, I've honestly, my entire life have had a problem with eating meat. Wow. I remember being about 6 years old and asking what was for dinner and being told that we're having, it was either chicken legs or chicken breast. And I just remember being like, chicken. What the hell? I'm like, there's a chicken's breast on my plate. I know the chicken didn't want me to have their breast, you know? There was a part of me that was like, this can't be right. I'm pretty sure there was, somebody's not happy about that. But at the time, I was just too young to execute any dietary changes. So then when I was about 13, my sister and I were like, we're not eating meat. We're not going to do it. And we pretty much starved that entire summer. And then gave in at a family barbecue, you know, because we hadn't eaten really any food you know, 6 weeks. We were surviving off of oranges. So, you know, it, like I said, it was definitely a struggle, but for me, the real reason behind it is, just, I am a person that really feels like I share earth with everything in it.
Right.
There's nothing more important or more elevated than anything else. And who am I to determine the course of someone else's life for my enjoyment? Yeah. So that's, at the end of the day, that is my sole, there was no other reason. It was just like, I don't want to harm somebody else for me to have dinner.
Okay. And then, so after that period of starving and then giving in at 13, because obviously there's a 6 year gap now until you get to 19, what happened then?
So I remember coming to Boston to visit family and being at my mother's house. And for some reason, and I don't know why, because my mother, she loves meat. She eats meat. But there was like a PETA pamphlet in her kitchen. Okay. And I was like, what is this? And so I was just like, you know what? I'm done. I was like, I can't. This is it. And that was the last time. That was literally just, I'm sorry about that. That was the last time that I had meat.
Okay.
Was that day.
Okay, cool. Okay, interesting. That's very, very similar to a few stories I've read with kind of people getting to that realization. So now let's move on to, okay, so I've already answered that question. Well, you've already answered the question about the decision to go plant-based. So what's your thoughts on the vegan craze now? I was listening to, I don't know if you follow or I'm sure you've heard of Joe Rogan being an American. So he had, on his show, he was just talking about veganism and I was actually quite surprised the stats that he gave. I mean, obviously, it's very hard to give a generalized stat like this because you're not actually talking to everyone in the world. But they said right now, it's actually only about 3 to 4% of all people on the planet are actually vegan. But you think it's more than that because you hear about it so much, like almost everyone's now vegan. So just with that in mind, what? Because I actually don't even know when the actual phrase was kind of brought about. Right. But what's your thoughts on the vegan craze in general? Is it a good thing, a bad thing? Do you think people are jumping on it for the wrong reasons?
I kind of feel like it's one of those things. I don't think there can be a wrong reason. I think if the outcome is the same, you know, I'm actually very happy about the trend. I think it's a good thing. I think, of course, there's going to be people that, you know, try it, can't stick to it. But then I think there'll be so many people that do try it and they'll see the benefits. Mm. There's lots of benefits to the lifestyle. So I think it's a good thing. I'm really excited about it. I'm excited about having options. Mm. You know, when I first stopped eating meat, like all there was tofu and I'm allergic to soy. So there you go. So for me, it was definitely a struggle. So now to see all of these different options, places and just restaurants embracing, you know, adding things to their menu and just making sure that we have options. It's really exciting for a lot of us to be in this time period where it is so popular and there are so many resources. So for me, it's very exciting and I'm very proud and happy to be a part of it.
Good. I remember because I teach holistic lifestyle coaching throughout Europe, and I was saying to the students in one of the internships I taught last week that if you want to find a way of eating that's really simple, if you want to eat junk food, become vegan, because it's the only one of these systems, whether it's paleo or carnivore diet, it's the only system where technically you could just eat chocolates, fizzy drinks and sweets and call yourself vegan. Because they're not meat. So, whereas obviously, you know, if you were plant-based, you couldn't eat chocolates and food because they're so protein-based. So, what I found is, you know, there are some people that, as we know, there are healthy vegans, there's unhealthy vegans, and some of them are the ones that are predominantly eating a lot of refined carbohydrates. So, you kind of said something earlier when you spoke about SAD, you know, standard American diet, but then also another acronym, I don't know if you're aware of, call it CRAP, which is caffeine, refined carbohydrates, alcohol, and then pasteurized milk.
That's a good one. I haven't heard that before. That's a good one.
Yeah, and so a lot of people, obviously they gravitate because, as you know as well, so many people are so when we look at all the different types of flavors, whether it's sour or bitter or astringent, pungent, we know most people are addicted to sweet. And so the easiest way to maintain that sweet taste is just to go vegan, because you can just get overloaded on lots of refined sugars, and then that creates a lot of acid in the body, and then you get illness from that, because, you know, acid ages people at a cellular level. So you know, there are oftentimes when people will look at some vegans and see the sick ones based on that example, and assume, well, veganism can't work because these guys are just eating sugars and sweets and fizzy drinks and stuff like that. Just any comments that you have on that?
Oh, yeah, I think, you know, I'm glad that you used the term vegan and plant-based, because they are two totally different things.
Yeah.
I think when you use the term vegan, it's a very loose term, and that applies to anything that does not contain an animal product. Whereas if you're eating a plant-based diet, it is definitely a little more stricter, in the sense that you're not going to indulge in certain things. And that doesn't mean you'll never do it, but it just means your primary diet is plant-based. And I think it is important to understand that vegan doesn't mean healthy, you know?
Yeah.
it doesn't mean healthy. So, I think it's important to know the difference.
Yeah, especially for me. And you can use this as an opportunity to get some water.
We spoke about this. Yeah, thank you.
So while you're drinking, I'll just touch on something that you said just now, which is something that I find with a lot of people, is that I always say to them, so I even though I'm very pro plant-based diets, I have clients that I say to them, should I go vegan, should I go plant-based or whatever? And I'm always like, well, let's see if it works for you. So some people, just from a biochemical point of view or a ethnic sort of point of view, it might not work for them, because I've seen some people that they need a higher dosage of proteins and fats, and it just doesn't work for them. So, you know, for me, one of the things is just to, even though I'm quite an advocate of it, it's a thing where I wouldn't push it on everybody because it doesn't work for everyone. One, you know, not one size fits all, as they say, one man's food is another man's poison. So it's not for everyone.
Absolutely. Right. Right. I totally agree with that. I think there has to be a level of tolerance for other people's needs when it comes to what they put in their body. I feel like there are times when things can come off really aggressive and pushy. Mm. And, you know, to be honest, when I first created my company, the name was Be Vegan.
Right.
And I remember having a conversation with my mother, and my mother and I trying to secure the domain name, and I couldn't get it. Mm. And my mom was like, you know what? That's actually a blessing in disguise. Why don't you call it Let's Be Vegan, where it's more inviting and less of a command, you know what I mean? And and I think that that's really important to just remember that everything does not work for everyone all the time. And to not be so judgmental about things, but just invite people to what you know and to information and let them do with it what they will, you know? So I think that's really important. I do.
Yeah, I think that has touched on something that's really important as well, is this whole thing about inclusion and allowing, as you said, as opposed to people being forced into doing things because the status quo demands it as such.
Right.
Such
right.
as when I was growing up, and people would always, like you said, would make you feel funny for making a healthier choice that's going to support your own life force.
Right.
And you know, just the beautiful thing that you said about the stage of allowing, there's this book called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, and it just talks about the way humans communicate with each other and how even if you're doing something out of love, if you do it in what's called a demand way, such as I want you to spend more time with me, or I want you to love me, or I want you to be more present. Even though that's set out of love, the statement is quite demanding, because what you're saying is, I demand that you do this. And so he talks about this this kind of disarming, where you say, it would be better if we could. So it's inclusive.
Yes.
So it's called it's called a doable request as opposed to a demand. And obviously, you know, just to kind of tie into what you're saying, there are so many people in the demanding stage in the world, and not enough people in the inclusive stage, such as let's be vegan, so let's try it and see if it works for us, as opposed to the demand of, you must be vegan, do you know what you're doing, what you're doing to the planet? And
right.
If it's done out of love, people still get their back up, because what you're telling me what to do,
and exactly.
That creates an armor. And there's a saying that I think it was Osho that said it, the way to become invincible is by becoming defenseless, which means lose your attachment to the defense of your own ego, which is just
absolutely
so
no. It's true though. I think, not to get off topic, but I totally think that that is an important way to look at a lot of things in life, and that is something that my mother has been very adamant about teaching me just at growing up. You know, how you ask people for things, or how you ask for things. There's a difference between like, can you and will you, you know what I mean? There's difference on how words are perceived. So I think it's really important to keep that in mind when you're trying to inform someone about something, or when you're trying to teach someone something is your approach. So I totally agree with that.
Okay. Then next question is, what are your thoughts on people starting vegetarianism? We kind of spoke about this off camera. If you need to get another treat right now, by all means,
right?
Because you're gonna.
I will. I'm into like. Okay, so hold that thought, and I'm gonna go grab some water.
Yeah,
and I'll be right back.
No okay. worries.
Thank you. Hold on 1 second.
she can't see me now.
I have returned.
No worries. I'll just look in at the time on it so I can let my editor know. So you can just pause that part. So that's fine.
Perfect.
Okay. So I'm just going to have a pause for a second. Just give her space to edit this part. So I'm going to give it a 10-second gap here. Okay. So now, next question is on, what are your thoughts on people? You know, this is going to be quite a political question when we talk about the effect of or the benefits of veganism on the planet when it comes to water consumption. So we spoke off camera on this about the idea that having more of a plant-based lifestyle on the planet would be better for the ecosystem, and the amount of reports that state that it costs less water to raise plants on a field than it does to raise cattle on a farm, and the effect that may have on the ecology of the planet. So what are your thoughts?
I think that it's an important thing to think about regardless of what diet you choose. I think understanding that we have, you know, this one planet to live on, like there's not an extra earth for us to go to if we just kind of destroy this one. And I think it's very important to look at those things and consider them, just and maybe implement some things into your lifestyle that you may not necessarily want to, but just for the sake of the future of the planet. I do think I've read a lot of those statistics, and it's kind of scary when you think about how much of our resources go into factory farming. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very scary thing to look at. And I think it should alarm all of us, whether you say, I'm not going to stop eating meat, but maybe I'm going to cut down. You know what I mean? Or maybe instead of relying solely on, big chain grocery stores, maybe I'll support more co-ops or CSAs, or if I do have the space to accommodate a small garden, maybe I should look into doing that, because I think everybody needs to kind of take a look at their footprint on Earth and see how we can minimize some things. And I think that to me is one of, it's like I said, it's an alarming thing to look at, and the numbers, they don't lie. It's pretty scary when you think about how much of our resources go into something like factory farming. It's really alarming. So I definitely think it's important to look at that and take into consideration. Absolutely.
Yeah. So tying into just some of those things that you spoke about with like factory farming as example, and a lot of the commercial toxins. So we know obviously nowadays the amount of money that is spent on commercial farming, factory farming, because they're just not connecting to Mother Nature. So like back in the days when people would till the crops, they would actually get out of the truck and get on foot. They'd actually feel the earth and feel the hydration of the soil and the quality of the plants. Nowadays, they just fly over it with planes and spray with pesticides, herbicides, rodenticides, fungicides, and so on, which, again, is just obviously polluting the soil with so much toxins that the body itself then has to detoxify. So it's putting a massive burden on the filtration pathways, the detox pathways of the body. What would you like to share with regards to being more in tune with nature when it comes to food preparation?
I think that's a really good question. I think it's really, really important. I think a lot of people don't understand the things that you just said. There are so many things that I think just mankind has done to deplete nature in different ways, and it does have a huge impact on our food, the mineral content of our food, even, you know, your organic plant-based foods. You know, there's a lot of things that I think you have to consider, and I think that a lot of people overlook detoxing. You know what I mean? A lot of people overlook it and think it's not something that we all should do. I do think it is something that we all should do at some point. Annually, I won't even just say it's, you know, once, I think everyone should do some form of detoxification, you know, at least once a year, maybe one major one once a year. I normally do two. A year, just for those same reasons. It's one of those things that's almost inevitable. There are things that we do about, you know, in regards to like cleaning our food and preparing our food and stuff like that. But I think overall, there's been so much damage done to the planet that it's not something that is just for one lifestyle. It's something for, like I said, no matter what diet you eat, you need to kind of take those things into consideration. Absolutely.
Right. Just as you're speaking, and just because we're touching on certain subjects, I'm actually writing down extra questions. So just any tips you have on, again, without giving away all the trade secrets, of course.
There are no secrets. We're here to share. There are no secrets.
Okay, cool. any tips on detoxification, like anything that you, like whether it's... like things, foods that you can take, like I forget the name in America. Do you call it cilantro?
Cilantro.
Cilantro. Oh, okay. Obviously, people use that a lot for detoxing. Yeah.
So I mean, there's so many. When it comes to detoxing, there are so many levels to it, and so many different things that you do. I think one of the good things, like as an introductory, for people is juicing. Mm. You know, that's a good beginner detox that I think just about anybody can do, with, you know, herbs, things like your cilantro, things like chlorella. There's there's lots of different things that you can implement into your diet to kind of just do like a nice, you know, what I'll say, like I said, there's levels to detoxing, and that's like a nice beginner level, is to just do a juice detox with, you know, some good fruit and some good leafy greens, you know, your dandelion, your cilantro, your, you know, just different herbs and things like that, that can really help. Your burdock, you can use juice burdock and things like that. So there's lots of things that you can incorporate into, your diet to just kind of give your body that little, you know, that little boost. But when it comes to like actual detoxing, I don't know how much you know about like what I do on the herbal side, but I am a big advocate of parasite cleansing.
Okay. Interesting.
I am a bit like, that is probably the herbal side of what I do actually takes up more time of my time than the food aspect. And one of the things that I think has helped make me so popular is parasite cleansing. Right. And it's something that I think historically we've always done, but in recent times we've kind of strayed away from it. And basically it is just the use of specific bitter herbs. And like you mentioned earlier, we like to indulge in sweet foods and the salty foods, and we kind of abandon the benefits of bitterness in our diet.
So we
indulge so much. We live in a society where it's just all about what tastes good, what feels good, what just makes us happy in the moment, and about the discipline that it requires to be healthy and to be strong. There's a lot of discipline that needs to happen when you're when you're talking about detoxing. And for most of us, the use of bitter herbs is just so foreign. Yeah. And it's so strange and it's so taboo that we, most of us don't know anything about it. But when it comes to real detoxing, that is my go-to, are bitter herbs, because they really just stimulate the digestive system like nothing else on earth. There's no food, there's no orange or watermelon you can eat that is going to do for your body what bitter herbs do. And so when it comes to like a real, like, digestive detox, that's my my go-to, are bitter herbs, absolutely. Every time, yeah, twice a year.
Good. I think we'll definitely, while we're on, I'm just going to say this, everybody knows, I definitely want to at some point do a podcast with you where we just talk about your, go really in depth on herbalism, because I think that's really interesting to kind of go into. Parasite stuff, I'm massive into. I coach a lot of people on parasitology and stuff. One thing I was going to kind of just say, just to throw out there as well, obviously, as you know, for most people, detoxification can be quite stressful on their body. So like you said, if you start with juice on something, it's a way of kind of cleansing the body without putting too much of a stress. But once you go into detox, man, I always say to some of my clients, well, our goal is to get you healthy enough to do a detox. I'm like, huh? But I thought the detox was going to make me healthy. And it's like, yeah, but the stress it's going to put on you. You have to be actually healthy first. So
those detox symptoms, man, they can really... they can scare people. You know, at this stage, I have heard and seen it all, and it can be very scary. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
let's proceed with caution. That's what I always say. Proceed with caution.
Just as you were saying as well, I was just, when you were talking about a lot of things that we used to do that we've forgotten about, like how we used to eat specific foods and now we're not. A saying came to me that I always use with people as well is, 10 years of ignorance can override 100 years of truth. And so we see that with the stuff we're forgetting that we used to do such a short time ago, that we see as normals now. Like you said, now it's just normal to eat junk food, to eat sugars, and to have this sense of self-gratification that's lost. And we oftentimes see people that are quite unfulfilled in their life finding their go-to treats in sugars and savory foods and stuff, rather than actually understanding the effect that that's having on them at a cellular or physiological kind of level.
Absolutely.
So let's kind of switch gears for a sec. So looking at this whole idea of this challenge that vegan or plant-based people may have with proteins. Obviously, that there's a lot of people that share this viewpoint that vegans can't be healthy because they just don't have the same level of proteins that that meat eaters would. You know, a lot of people talk about incomplete proteins.
Right.
So yeah, what are your thoughts with that? And what ways around it are there?
I get asked that question. I mean, at this point, probably, if I count social media, at least maybe 50 times a day.
Wow.
And my response is always the same. It is not something that is necessarily even a real concern to most of us that are vegan. There's, I think, a huge, I'll say misconception, you know, when a lot of times I would meet someone that I've never met before, and, you know, of course, throughout the course of conversation, somehow we'll always get on the topic, I'm vegan, you know, and the response is always the same. Well, wow, you actually still have a body, there's a misconception that, oh, if you're vegan and I do eat a plant-based diet, that you'll lose your curves, that you'll be protein deficient. And I always say, well, most people are actually fiber deficient. I don't know anyone that's actually protein deficient. And I know quite a few vegans, and I don't know anyone that has any issues with protein. I kind of think protein is that word that is used almost as a scare tactic for the lifestyle, when it's actually it's not as big of a concern as people think it is. There, plant-based foods have, you know, you can get complete proteins from plant-based foods. It does not have to come from an animal source. So I think that's really important that you ask that. I think it is a misconception. I think, like I said, most people are deficient in so many other things, and protein is just not one of them, especially when it comes to a vegan diet. I think, and maybe that's because 20 years ago when veganism was so new, not new, but it was so taboo and there were so few resources. You couldn't just go and get hemp seeds at a Whole Foods, or you couldn't go and just find quinoa. I was like, what is quinoa? Like, there are things that have become more of a resource recently than in the past. So I think maybe we've carried over some of the things from the past into today's veganism, if that makes sense, that just aren't quite necessary now. We have so many ways to, or so many alternatives now that we didn't have before that are readily accessible. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, or even when I first became vegetarian, like I said, all we had was tofu. You know, that was it. There was tofu and there was Morningstar. I don't know if you guys have the brand Morningstar. It's this really, like, I don't want to say that it's just this very generic brand of, like, vegan, pre-made vegan, like, burgers and stuff like that. So I don't, it's not a concern. It's really not as big of a concern as people think it is.
Right. Man, do you know, like, the way you're talking and stuff and the flow, I just love this conversation. I love how you think. It's really cool. So yeah, I've got to switch gears because I know we could talk for hours on this stuff.
This is fun. I'm enjoying it. So
let's talk now about, because I'm definitely, for all you listeners, I'm definitely going to get Chantel back on. Boy, I'm loving a lot of the stuff that you're saying. Let's talk now about your, we're going to totally switch gears now. Some more personal stuff, like your business and stuff like that. So let's look at your morning ritual, because obviously a lot of this stuff we talk about is things that are beneficial for people in general. So now, morning rituals obviously set the day up for people. So if you could just kind of share, if you have a morning ritual, and what kind of share some of what that morning ritual is.
I'm so excited to do this with you specifically, because I know we're into very similar things, so I won't sound like... crazy person, because normally people are like, what? So I'm a, for whatever reason, I think it's the entrepreneur in me. I'm a very early riser. I get up I'm up before the sun. So I'll say that. I'm like, go back to sleep. I can't. My body's like, if you're awake, you're awake. Get up, let's go. You have things to do. But typically in the mornings, I get up really early, and the first thing I do is a meditation, just to set the tone for my day. And I'm sure, as you know, being in business, there's a lot of fires to put out every day for me. It's just never know what the day is going to be like. So it's important for me to kind of try to ground myself before the start of the day. So typically I'll get up and I'll do a 15-minute gratitude meditation. And then I'll go into maybe a 15 minutes of intentional meditation, just how I intend for my day to go. And then I have like a crystal grid where, you know, if I haven't set my crystals in the grid and I haven't accomplished the things that are on my grid, I'll reset my grid. And then I start my podcast. And by then it's probably like 7. So normally I'm up at like 5:30. And so this is by 7, I'll start my podcast and then the day becomes, and then it's just, and then, you know, if I'm really big on making sure you set aside the time for yourself before everyone else gets up, because once everyone else gets up, then your day shifts from being about you and to being about everyone else. So I'll be honest, recently I haven't been as strict with some of those things, but there are parts of that routine that I try to make sure I do every day. Oh, and I also try to make sure I read every day, every day. So,
yeah, as they say, if you want to hide things from a black person, pull it in a book.
Right. Not this one. I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it. No, I'm really big on just, you know, and not to stay on topic, but to just kind of give a little bit more information There's this one book that I have been reading for about 6 years called The Master Key System by Charles Hanel. I don't know if you know about this book, but it's just about, you do? So I have been going, I still haven't made it past part five. And I've been reading this book forever, but so every morning, that's one of the things in my routine is to just kind of go over, you know, certain parts of it and do the meditation exercises in the book. And that's just, that's really important to me. Really important.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, I've got some questions from part two and part three. So it's really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So, and just kind of summarize why it's important when you think, I know you kind of alluded to it when you're talking about almost like seizing the day and like you said, not. So I was watching something, I forget the guy's name, and he was talking about how when people wake up in the morning, how one of the first things they do is called Facebook depression. One of the first things they do is they wake up and they check their phone and then they are reacting to their how many likes, dislikes, and so on. So they're, as you said, kind of being dictated to, their mood, their temperament is being dictated to them by the external rather than the internal. So he was like saying, when you wake up, do not check your social media for at least a good few hours of the day, so you're actually almost like seizing the day. So obviously that's one of the benefits of the morning ritual. Do you have any other kind of suggestions as to why you think people should do the morning ritual?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it sets the tone for your day. I think there are things that they're not even just your morning ritual, but just things that you need to think about when it comes to self-care. And for me being a parent, like I said, once the sun is up and my son is up, it's like the day it shifts and it changes, and it's really hard. It's really easy to lose focus. The best way I can describe it is, I think what was the movie called? The Secret, which I love. I've made him watch it with me so many times, but just, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, how there's that one scene where they're showing you how one thing can just trickle down and you can let small things occur throughout your day. And depending on how you react to them, it can determine how your day is as a whole. So there's like a person whose alarm goes off, they're tired, they stub their toe, and then they go to they get to work, and then they're driving in traffic and they're at every red light and they get to work late, and then the boss is mad. It's just, so for me, that morning time, it for me is that time to say, you know what, things may happen today, things that I don't like may happen today, but how am I going to react to them is really determined by my morning ritual. If I don't have my morning ritual, it becomes very easy for me to, you know, oh my God, Izzy, that's my son, that's what I call him. Right. You're going to be late to school. Oh my God, we didn't pack your lunch. It's very easy to let those things affect you. And then you kind of infect the people around you with that energy. So for me, it's just important to take that time and set that intention. Like, this is how my day is going to be, regardless of what occurs around me. I'm not going to be at affect everything. I'm not going to let it affect me. I'm going to go through it. So it's a very powerful tool. I think it's very good for productivity when you get up early and you have a routine. It is for me.
Yeah, I think you said something key just now about being at the effect of rather than the cause of. And as you're saying, I always say people are either being reactive or being proactive. And if you're in the reactive stage, it's all based on circumstances dictating the pace of your life. Whereas if you're proactive, you're creating. So do you want to be a creator or being affected by? And most people are at the reactionary stage of life as opposed to being the co-creator of their life.
So I mean, and it's something I will say this, I have not perfected it. It is something, I'm a work in progress, but that's just one of the things I noticed about myself. When I'm on top of my meditation, I'm on top of my morning routine, things go a lot better for me and for everybody around me. Absolutely. I think it's super important. Super important.
Cool. Right. So we've got probably three more questions to get through. So again, more about you. So you just said, I said to you, tell us about your ebook, and then you were like, no, I've got 6 or 7 ebooks.
Yeah.
So tell us a little about the themes of those and which one, if you're more proud of one than another, mm-hmm. or, you know, stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Man, I'm one of those people that I don't get proud, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's...
No, I hear that.
I don't ever, because I'm always like, oh.
You don't settle. Yeah, you want to always
Yeah,
do
I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I got to do better. Mm. I think I would say, so all of my ebooks are cookbooks. And for some people, it's like, oh, they're just cookbooks. But for me, it's a big deal. From each one is a big deal for a different reason. My first one, of course, because it's my first one. But then my most recent one, because I'm most proud of like the photography and things like that. But as a whole, the reason I do it is because I just want to simplify things for other people. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, a lot of people when they believe they're ready to make that transition. They want to eat healthier. They want to do better. They don't know what to do. There are a lot of people who make the lifestyle seem intimidating. And so my goal is always to take intimidation out of it. So every time I do a project or a book or a video, you know, recipe video, it is me simply trying to simplify it for whoever is on the other side so that they can look at it or they can read it and say, oh my God, this is so, I can do that. That's so easy. So really each one of my books, it was made with that in mind. Like I want whoever gets it and reads it to feel so comfortable and so confident and being able to incorporate this into their lifestyle, that they don't give up and it just kind of sparks something in them to just keep going. And just like I said, I think there's a lot of intimidation. It's like, I want to go vegan, but I can't. Oh, I want to go vegan because I love chicken. I'm like, well, you love chicken. What if I tell you I can make something that tastes like chicken, but it's not chicken? Mm-hmm. It's easy. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where, for me, the challenges come from and the motivation behind each one of my books. Like I said, at this point, I think there's 6 and 7.
You've got so many books, you don't know how many you've got.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm constantly working. I have I'm working on 4 simultaneously right now. So, yeah, I'm a very creative person. Mm-hmm. I'm a person that thrives on being creative. I could not ever see myself doing, I will just say this. When I had a job, it was like I was dying inside.
Yeah,
Literally, I would pull up to my job and I would be like getting out of the car and I'd go ready to clock in and I'd just be like, my soul was like, oh, what are you doing? This isn't right. But being able to be creative is everything to me. So it's a happy place for me. Mm. And people seem to respond in a way that it seems like they're happy as well. So it's an even exchange between myself and those that you know, get my books.
Mm. Well, you kind of already answered the next question, which was how do you come up with recipes?
I'm hungry. I'm hungry.
That's funny.
No, that's it. I'm hungry and I like food to taste good. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be vegan. I mean, I've had some pretty bad vegan food. I mean, that's no shade to anyone else, but I've been to restaurants, so I've been around other chefs and I've tasted their food and I'm like, this tastes vegan. This is what people think vegan is going to taste like and this is why they don't want to do it. Mm. So my goal is to make sure that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. Mm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't want you to eat and be like, well, now I got to go get some chicken. You know what I mean? You know, so that's, you know, what I have in mind. And just really honestly being a foodie and loving food and wanting my food to taste good despite what it doesn't contain.
Just on that, do you have any quick kind of go-to meals that you could suggest for people that, look, you could just do this and that's like something that'll take you 20 minutes to make? Like, what is your go-to?
I mean, I am a huge taco fanatic. I feel like you can put anything in a flour tortilla, or whatever tortilla. Like right now, I've been making coconut flour like these gluten free coconut flour tortillas that are just, they're so good. And so my thing is, tacos are so easy. You can pretty much saute any vegetable, mushrooms. You can put beans in there, and avocado, and you can have like a complete meal out of tacos. That's, I love soup right now. Soup is another easy thing that if you're not comfortable with cooking, you can just throw a few very flavorful ingredients into a pot and in 20, 30 minutes have something that is so warm and so flavorful. I think if you don't mind, I'll give a few food items that I think a lot of people overlook that make things tastier that people may not know about. One of them is leeks. Like if you're making soup or stew, you put leeks in there. They're really dirty. You'll have to clean them really well, but they add so much flavor to just about everything that you put them in. Another thing that I love is chipotle pepper. It adds that slow, smoky flavor that is really present in Southern food without the bacon or without the pig foot or whatever. I don't know, the pig foot or whatever they put in place of weight and really just add depth of flavor that a lot of people don't know about. I did a cooking workshop in Brooklyn about a week and a half ago, and I did like greens, and in the South we always use some type of meat to flavor, and I did the chipotle pepper, and people were just like, oh my god, I had no idea I could get this flavor without the use of meat. So those are just like some of the things that I just love to incorporate into foods. But soup, tacos, pasta is always a good one. There's so many alternative pastas. You don't have to settle for your typical gluten pasta. There's so many good alternatives now. I saute a lot of greens. I do a lot of, but like I said, right now I do a lot of soup. It's cold. I'm in New England and it's cold. So I do soup probably 2 or 3 times a week. But yeah, those are some of the things that are my go-to.
Right. That was going to be my next question. So you already covered that one as well.
Sorry.
Right. What else? I'm scanning through my right, you've already answered that one very much. Okay. So you were talking about, actually, I'm going to jump to something else because I want to kind of end on this actually. Right. So one of the things that I always talk to people about when it comes to food is vibrational frequency of foods. So it's something that I always break down to people whenever you speak to biochemists, they're always very much pushing plant-based stuff because of the vibrational frequency of those foods. So one of the things we've studied is understanding that obviously the human body is a vibration, and every cell in the body is vibrating at certain frequencies. Most of the organs in our body are resonating between about 80 and 88 megahertz. And what they found is a lot of the vegetables such as celery and kale and stuff like this are vibrating. The green vegetables are kind of vibrating at about 90 to 100 megahertz of frequency. And I was listening to this biochemist from Germany just breaking down frequencies of food, and he was like saying, you have megahertz of energy, and then you have biophotons, and then you have scale waves, which is like another stage of frequency. And he was just talking about how the things that capture this resonance are the plant-based foods. And I'm sure you've heard of, I'm sure you're from America, so you would have heard of Dr. Sabi. So I had friends that actually spent a lot of time with him over the years as well. And obviously he talks a lot about the frequency of foods. And Dr. Robert Young, I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Robert Young. Yeah, again, the same sort of thing, talking a lot about the frequency of food. So
Yeah.
I don't know if you've read much on this or your thoughts on the amount of life force that you get from foods.
Absolutely. I don't want to butcher the name of the photography, but I think is it Krillin or Krillon photography?
Oh, Kalian.
Kalian. Okay. See, I knew I was butchering it, so I'm glad I made that announcement before I said it. But yeah, so I mean, I've seen some really beautiful photography, just showing the energy of plant-based foods and the colors and things like that. But I absolutely think it's really important to just simplify it in a sense where you think about how do plants grow? They grow up towards the sun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's to me, that says it all. I mean, that's to me, that really, in most cases, it says it all to me about the energy of your food. And there's no way you can deny that, you know, plant-based foods were designed for us. You know what I mean? They literally are designed for us. They, you know, are able to absorb the minerals from the rocks and the dirt that we can't, in a way that we can't, for our benefit. And I think it's a very magical, like I told you, I have this obsession with plants. So I'd sound like I'm getting a little out there, but I do have this obsession with plants because I just think they're very magical in how they're able to grow and exist and how they're able to use what's around them. It's just a beautiful cycle of life that happens with plants and when we consume plants and how you feel. There's no, I don't think it's a coincidence why when you eat a salad, you feel good afterward. You know what I mean? Like you literally feel light, you feel good, you still have energy, you have mental clarity. I think that's by design. And I think it kind of just ties into all of the things that you said about the vibrational frequency of food being in alignment with our very own vibrational frequencies. It's a very magical, beautiful process to me when it comes to eating plants. I will say to most people, I know I'm a little bit of a weirdo, but I just sometimes, like, even when I'm just mixing herbs, it's I physically can feel the energy. Like, it's a very therapeutic, very healing process to work with nature in that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't explain it in words. It's just a feeling. You just feel so good when you are working with nature. It's a good feeling. And it's a very soulful feeling for me. And I love it. And so I may not know like the hertz, the megahertz. I know how it feels. I'm a Cancer. So I know I can describe the feeling. I can't necessarily describe the science.
But I do
think... it's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's nowadays, especially as people are getting more into, and we'll probably talk about this sort of stuff in another podcast or something, but people getting into plant medicines and going into ayahuasca and DMT and all sort of stuff. Nowadays, it's like the experience or the having what's called experiential is far more important than the idea. So many people yesteryear were in the idea plex of what they think something does rather than having the experience of it. So like you said, if people have the experience of eating live foods or have the experience of eating your recipes as opposed to varying their idea of what being vegan really is, the experience trumps everything.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing, not to get too off, but like for me, it's the same way with crystals for me. I get the same, like, this is nature made. This is magic. I'm holding a piece of magic in my hand. There's a physical feeling that you get. I just think there's a very physical joy you feel when you are in alignment with nature. There's no better feeling to me.
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
Yeah. And just, I don't know if you've heard of the book, The Secret Life of Plants.
I have that book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have that. And there's another one. What is the other one? I want to say it's The Secret Wisdom of Nature.
Right. I think I've heard of that one. I don't think I have.
That one is also, I mean, it just kind of gets into the animals and it puts everything together in a very beautiful, simple way. But I think it is The Secret Wisdom of Nature.
Right.
I think
I do have that in my Amazon wish list of books.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. You should definitely get it. Okay. Absolutely.
Cool. I think we'll leave it there. That's kind of a good note to end on. Mm-hmm. But before we do, obviously, just kind of let people know what your social medias are, what your website is, and anything else you want to share with my listeners.
As far as social media.
Yeah, so how can people reach out to you? How can people find you?
So my Instagram is bvegan with 2 underscores. Facebook is Let's Be Vegan. You can find me on Facebook at Let's Be Vegan. I'm not really savvy on Facebook. I do have a page there, but I'm not as present there. But so Instagram is my main social media platform, but my website is letsbevegan.com, and that's where you can find my books. I do lots of free challenges. I have lots of free resources about herbal medicine. That's where my herb shop is. I do a recipe blog there. And I always put information about my upcoming workshops and things like that on letsbevegan.com. So that's the home of all of my projects, and my social media is Instagram, and that's bvegan with 2 underscores.
Fantastic. Well, it's been great having you on, and definitely look forward to kind of bringing you in again and talking more about business, because I've already written some notes about stuff. Herbalism, awesome. Business, and crystals. That'll definitely be a subject matter that I want to kind of get across with you. Thanks again for your time.
No, my pleasure. It was a pleasure. It was such a good conversation, and I'm so glad to finally be able to connect with you. I think I love your page. I really do.
Thank you.
I really do.
Cool. All right. Well, until next time. Take care.
All right. Just stay in touch.
I will do.
Have a good one.
Okay. Thanks. Bye. So guys, what did you think? A great interview, right? I really enjoyed it. I had such a good time, and she was quite an easy person to talk to. And I find also that people that are in the wellness field, that are truly in the wellness field doing it out of service, often, pretty well, across the board, are nice people. Every single time I teach courses on holistic lifestyle and coaching, and functional exercise and anything like that, anybody that's really truly into wellness speaks from a place of total authenticity. There is no rubbish, there's no crap there. They're just being real. They're in this life because they're truly wanting to be of service to the planet. And in that, they have instinctive values that support well-being, truth, and honesty. Hopefully you picked that up from the interview. And I'm going to get it back on again. As you guys heard, there was a lot of interesting stuff. There's a lot of things that I really wanted to cover that we didn't have enough time to cover, because I was so surprised by some of the things that she did that I kind of changed the line of questioning. And so next time I'll definitely get back on and we'll cover some more interesting things. So as for me, project-wise, you'll be hearing a lot more about that, but I've been focusing a lot on just understanding that in order for me to reach and connect with other people, I have to do more kind of mentoring work and group work. So that's what I've really been focused on doing a lot more now, is how can I kind of reach more people, because the way I work is typically private, one-on-one. So now I'm going to branch out and I'm creating this expansion program platform, which is a 3-tier platform. I have one platform that's a free platform on Facebook, and then I have a paid membership platform on Facebook as well, which allows me to be able to connect with people and teach and do like an hour of coaching monthly, and have a magnificent, beautiful team or group of
like-minded people that are in this community that are able to talk with each other. They don't work for me, they're just people that like my work, and they're in this my Facebook group, which is a great community of like-minded, authentic people, as I spoke about. And then I've also created the third tier, which is a expansion mentorship program where people can be mentored by me as well as two other people that I'm working with. And we go through so many different things on that. So the whole point of expansion is to help humanity expand in my own way, in the way that I've learnt, my own niche, which is expanding the consciousness of the mind, teaching people understanding of how to grow themselves, how to be authentic, how to find their purpose, direction in life, how to cultivate the life force energy, and really just allowing me to be able to condense the 20 odd years I've been doing this work to kind of synthesize that information in a way that people can take away and apply it to their own lives, because our goal is not to be guided or led, it's to guide and lead. So my goal isn't just to help people learn a little bit, is to help them learn enough that they can become their own guides and teachers and then help others, because this is how we pay it forward. If I can help someone to teach other people, then I doubled my work in my impact on the planet. So if I help one person, that's just me helping one person, but if I help that one person to help one more person, then now we've doubled that effort. So that's what our goal is when we look at raising the consciousness of the planet. The best way to do that is to impart information on people that can then impart that onto others. As the famous saying goes, I think it was Abraham Lincoln that said it, the best way to help the poor is by not becoming one of them. As it said, the poor don't need company, they need leadership. So those understandings and those kind of sayings are expressing that our goal is to not become part of the problem, but become part of the solution. And by becoming part of the solution, we help others to also become part of the solution. And if we create global change of multiple people that are part of the solution, the world changes and heals. So one person at a time. So that's kind of where my emphasis has been in recent times. I'm hopeful that, like I said, you got a lot from this podcast, and look forward to the next ones, because I've got some really good, interesting ones coming out soon. I'm going to be interviewing Michelle Hood, who, oh my gosh, she makes some beautiful organic pyramids, which are basically EMF dampeners. They reduce electromagnetic frequency radiation in the world, and they stimulate all the chakra energy systems of the body. I'm going to be interviewing another lady, Jessica, who does Tibetan bowls, so that should be coming up soon. And I'm going to be interviewing one of my clients who does CBD oils, but really high-grade CBD oils of different types. That will be interesting as well. So I'm really working on trying to get some really interesting guests in, as well as I will be also doing solo projects within time, as well as building my platform with one of my clients, Emil Heskey, and our Hero's Journey podcast, which should be coming out soon. All right, guys, that's enough from me. Speak to you soon. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. All right, peace.